Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, getting back in here on Diamond Conversations, a part of the Place to Be podcast family on Place to Be Nation Pop. Joined today by a very special guest is not only am I welcoming in my local statistician, Mr. Doug Barclay, but I'm joined today by social media guru, writer for CBS Sports, the great Danny Vietti, joining us today here on Diamond Conversations. Danny, how's everything going in your neck of the woods?
It's going. There's been, you know, obviously some weird times going on lately, but I'm hanging in there. I'm safe. That's all you could ask for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no precedence that we really can put this up against, and it seems like every day there's a new chapter, you know, a new little piece of history that seems to be written. But all the while, a lot of baseball drama, and we're going to get into that today here on Diamond Conversations. But let's talk about your baseball journey, man. So tell us how you got to CBS, how your baseball journey started, and why this crazy game of baseball really just kind of, once it gets its teeth sunk into you, there's no turning back.
Yeah, so just to keep a long story short, you know, I grew up playing baseball, of course, just like many people did. I went to San Diego State to try and walk on. Didn't quite work out as I had hoped. Went to transferred to University of San Francisco. Pitched just terribly there and just didn't really find my element there. So then I ended up at William Jessup, which is a small NAIA in Northern California. Really found a role with those guys, and we had a lot of success. On top of that, I had a side job with Max Preps, which is the high school sports, the source for high school sports across the country. And of course, Max Preps, if you didn't know, is owned by CBS Sports. So just kind of worked my way up the ladder from there. And I've always been a baseball guy, and you know, I've had three older brothers. I learned from them and had a lot of really good guys take me under their wing. And so I've been truly blessed to have, you know, blessed to be in the position I am today.
That's very cool. So you kind of get the perspective of having played at a very intense level and then translating it to, you know, obviously what you're doing now today and kind of being able to understand certain aspects of the game that maybe some other writers can. That's always a plus.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I hope to give to the journalism world, if you will, just because I think I can kind of see both sides a little bit. And I tend to lean a little bit more player side, especially as we're talking about these negotiations lately. I tend to lean more towards the players as opposed to the owners here. But yeah, I definitely hope I can bring that to the table.
Well, here we are. It's the first week of June. There's still no baseball. We've been following this saga since the end of spring training. We've all gone through it together, as everybody's saying. We've kind of experienced these ups and downs, not only of like life, but baseball life. And thinking, oh, well, by this time, we were supposed to already have baseball a few months ago by the rumors back then. But now here we are. We're still in the beginning of June. There's nothing that seems to be happening yet. What's kind of your take on where the 2020 baseball season stands at this point?
Yeah, it's been just a whirlwind. One day we're really optimistic, the next we're not. So it's tough. Today was one of those days where we're not all that optimistic because the latest proposal from the owners was proposing around a 50-game schedule this year, whereas the players are still looking for 114 games. And so they're so far left, the players are, and the owners are so far right, and vice versa, however way you want to put it, that they're not inching towards each other quick enough right now. And time isn't of the essence right now. They're running out of time because they do not want to have a season lean or go into the National Football League season. The NBA is obviously, they just announced they're probably going to get started up here in July. So they're going to have a lot of competition too. So there's a lot of financial concerns still being batted around. I think the players are winning that war. I think the owners are going to concede to some type of prorated rate, which is great for the players. And that's what they've really been fighting for. The duration of the season is really where that's the point of concern right now, because neither side is really willing to budge right now. I think they will eventually come to a decision, come to an agreement. And I think you're looking, if I were to put a best guess on it, would be likely 70, 80 games-ish, somewhere in between that 114 that the players wanted and 50 that the owners wanted, somewhere in between there.
Yeah, that's what exactly what Doug was saying right before we were waiting for you to jump on, is that 70 games seems to be maybe that's where we're going to settle on. And you know, look, at this point, we'll take anything. We'll concede to any of the rule changes. We'll concede to any of these, you know, kind of jumbled league switches and American League and National League teams sharing a division, whatever. We'll get through all that as long as we have something on paper. But, you know, it even seems like on the back burner of all this is the other restrictions that they have to have of no fans in the stands, neutral sites, things of that nature. How many people can be in the dugout, pitching changes, mound visits. It seems like now the games is the hurdle, but it's still like all that other stuff that has to, I guess, be ironed out by the time this starts, whenever that is.
Yeah, the good thing about today, at least the guys I've been talking to and what I've been hearing, is that those minor issues, if you will, the health concerns, they actually are pretty much in agreement on those, the dotting of the I's, the crossing of the T's so far. The bigger issues right now is just, it always comes down to this. It always comes down to money and,
yeah, exactly right.
The bigger details, if you will. So the good thing is that health concerns, the testing, however many times they want to do it throughout the week, it's looking like three times per week for each player. Those details are pretty much set in stone. You know, it could change before the season starts, of course, and who knows with this virus, it could really change overnight. So cross your fingers it doesn't. But the good thing is that they do have some things going for them. They do have some things that are already agreed upon. So there's at least some type of standard already set and some type of agreement made.
So Danny, this is Doug over here. You know, if you were a betting man, would you say yes to baseball this year?
Yeah. Not that I am a betting man, but if I would have taken my guess and I would have put money on, I would say yes. There's just too much money to be lost if they don't have a season. You're talking about billions of dollars, even without fans in the stands. And so kind of like you mentioned earlier, some is better than none, whether it's money, whether it's games, whether it's anything. And I truly think, especially with NBA coming back, NHL coming back, NASCAR's back, golf is coming back, if baseball is left on the back burner, I don't think it's going to end the league or anything, but it would be a really bad look, for a league that is already trying to catch up with the NBA and NFL and has been for years. And it's just, that's not the shtick, or it's not the stigma that baseball wants attached to it right now, especially with the 2021 CBA coming up next year.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now just to kind of switch gears really quick, you know, I started following you on Twitter. You popped into my feed by posting a few surveys that, you know, especially during quarantine, you know, really engaged me and made me think a little bit. I wanted you, if you could talk about what you find to be engaging social media content as relates to sports and, you know, what is breaking through the void? Who are you seeing things do well? What do you think is the best way to go about you know, getting through, like I said, breaking through the void?
That's a good question. And I think a lot of my experience and knowledge has truly just come from working in the social media business. I do both. I dip into both pools right now for CBS Sports. I write both for the MLB team, and then I also do social media as well. And so that's allowed me to learn from the experts. It's allowed me to learn from the audience and kind of see what works, what doesn't. So, I'd say my really big hitting point was last winter when I did a bracket of social media content creators, baseball content creators, and that really started to take off. This was last December, allowed me to network with different people, and that kind of gave me the platform to kind of build my own brand, build my own social media brand. And so lately, without news, without baseball really happening, except for the KBO, of course, it's been tough. This last week and a half, I've tried to really stay away because there's larger issues at hand. But before that, I just try and come up with ways to keep people entertained with nothing really entertaining us lately besides movies. There's no sports entertainment going on. I try and think of different ways for people to interact and even just things that just pop in my head. I don't think there's all that much strategy behind it other than just the experience that I've had over the past several years working for CBS Sports and Max Preps and kind of seeing what works on social media and what doesn't.
And now for different teams and, you know, different players that are making their own personal brands, you know, would you say it's everyone has to, you know, be highly engaged right now? Or do you think that people can, you know, have either not much of a presence or just a tiny presence on social media to still be able to engage with their groups.
Just to clarify, are you talking about right now with the social issues going on? Or
No. I meant just as a, as, you know, brand, kind of team brand and player brand social media. You know, how important is it to stay totally engaged with a group on Twitter or Facebook?
Sure. Yeah. That's a really good question. And I think you're already kind of seeing how important social media is for the players and individual players. Mike Trout, completely silent his first few years in the league. He was non-existent on Instagram, Twitter, and he still is a rather quiet guy. He tries and stays away from the big headlines and the big cameras. But at the same time, you're seeing him appear in a little bit more commercials. You're seeing him post to social media a little bit more. And as you can see, you can physically see his brand grow over the past year or two. As we all know, Mike Trout's the best player in the league. However, he's gotten some criticism that he's not really in the public sphere as much. And so, from a social media standpoint, if you're more of a quiet guy, you don't have to go appear in all these shows. You don't have to appear on all these commercials, endorsements and whatnot. But what you can do, social media is an easy alternative. You can communicate with your fans, and it's not necessarily a money aspect either. Social media is just a fun way that you can interact with your fans and get a personal touch, and it humanizes them. And I think that's really the key with social media is, with athletes especially, they're almost thought of as godlike, if you will. But really, these guys are just people. And so social media really has a way of just humanizing them, seeing how they interact with their kids, their friends, what they do on the weekends and whatnot.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, the guys that are streaming on Twitch, and that's where you're getting comments about something going on in the league. And it's almost like if we were to put this into context for the 2020 season, I don't want to hear what they have to say at their locker after the game. I'm going to wait another 2 hours until they get their phone in their hands and they're, you know, then they can really tell you what they thought about the game. And that's kind of where you see the evolution changing in social media. And now, especially the kids coming up now, this is the social media generation. These are everybody, they've grown up with this. People my age, we kind of had it a little bit in our late teens, 20s. We didn't have it growing up our whole lives. So I could see these guys, they know what it's all about. So you could scroll back, you know, 6-7 years on a Twitter account and see this kid in high school. And that's the interesting thing. So it does humanize them. But like I said, I kind of am going to wait for them to comment on stuff on social media rather than hear what they got to say outside their locker, because I feel like the truth comes through the computer or the phone.
Yeah. And that's another really, really great point, because there's a lot of players out there that, deservedly so, aren't always honest and truthful with the media anymore, because a lot of times with the media is they'll pull quotes and they'll twist their words a little bit, and it happens from the top down. And so a lot of players are wary of that, and they don't trust the media. A lot of media members can be a little sketchy sometimes. And not to say that everyone in this business is, because there is a lot of really great people here, but there are, of course, those bunch that are looking for headlines. And so to your point, social media can give players a way to really speak their minds without it being twisted, without it being pulled and misconstrued.
I will give you, writers in general and beat writers and guys that are on TV, a lot of credit for what you've been doing during the pandemic, because the creativity has shined through everybody. And I've never seen more top 10 lists, you know, greatest five Yankees in history, you know, top 10 left side of the infield, Los Angeles Dodgers of all time. The amount of stuff that's come out of this has been amazing, and it taps into everybody's creativity. So it's cool to see how the players use social media, but even the writers, people like yourself, beat writers, commentators, everybody using social media now, it's like everybody's really kind of got it. And, you know, and I kind of see that only getting stronger as the years and the months go on and this season starts. But what do you kind of think about that? You think that this pandemic has almost helped people's creativity in coming up with things, kind of like what you said earlier?
Yes, but I'll be honest, my tank is empty, man. I don't have ideas. So we of course have weekly meetings as the writing crew, and we jump on the call and we kind of do a round table of what we're going to be working on, some new ideas to float on the table. And it's been a lot of crickets lately, just because we've done everything, and we're going on 3 months now. There's no news, and we've done all the, like you said, the top five, the top tens, and It's tough too when you're a national audience because you're trying to appeal to
right.
fans of all these different clubs. Whereas if you're a single club, you can kind of focus on maybe a top prospect you could do. And not to say that these beat writers and single team reporters are having it easy right now. They're not. But it's just tough from a national perspective to create national headlines and to get a national audience to look at your stuff when there's really no national headlines happening.
Yeah, it's great. Hey, but you see your stuff getting shared because that one person, you know, on the other side of the country from you sees, hey, the top 10 baseball movies that came out in the 90s. You know, it's like it's very cool and it's very unique. And this time has really shined a light on that. But let's talk about you a little bit growing up. Who was your team growing up? Who was your favorite player? Who drew you to the game of baseball?
Yeah, so I grew up in a really small town called Cottonwood, California, in Northern California. So I was a San Francisco Giants fan. My first jersey was a Barry Bonds jersey. I think it was like a $15 jersey from Walmart or something. So Kings fan, Raiders fan. Really, believe it or not, I really liked Pedro Feliz. He was one of my guys growing up. He's not exactly the perennial all-star that everybody loved or anything, but I really loved the way he played. I really loved the way Omar Vizquel played. And then we had those golden years with the Giants in 2010, 2012, 2014. Those were my high school days. So I kind of hit, they hit their stride when I was hitting my stride. So it was kind of perfect timing there.
Yeah. You know, as a Met fan, we only crossed the Giants one time there in 2000. And it was, I thought the Giants were going to steamroll the Mets. I was shocked that the Mets beat the Giants. that was quite the shocker because, you know, you wanted Barry's going to hit some big flies, but they seem to keep him in check. So San Francisco Giants. So we'll talk about the stadium. Talk about the history of the team. You know, the team obviously rich in player development. You know, rich in terms of Hall of Fame players to come through there. How about the franchise itself? Well, what was it something that you really took to as a kid growing up?
Yeah, you know, my dad was an Oakland A's fan, so it was always a little bit surprising to people that I was a Giants fan. And I'm really glad I became a Giants fan, especially with recent events that have been going on. Not to forget, I understand there was a controversy with Larry Bear, the Giants front office member last year, and he was suspended. That was a very rare occurrence for the San Francisco Giants. They're known to be very tied up and a tight-knit front office, and they have been over the years. And so they've taken care of their minor leaguers. They've taken care of their players. They're a classy organization, and they stay out of the headlines for the most part. So the people that they recruit, the people that they sign, the people that they draft, they really uphold to a certain standard. And it's almost forgotten about over here on the West Coast because, especially in San Francisco, San Francisco is considered this vibrant city and a lot of different demographics going on. And you tend to think of your teams, whether it's baseball teams, professional sports teams, whatever it is, you tend to connect the city and their stigma with the team itself. And so San Francisco Giants are actually very, they're similar, yet they're different. They're similar because you get these different personalities with guys like Hunter Pence that came along. But at the same time, they're kind of boring as well. They hold to the standard. Guys like Buster Posey, Brandon Crawford, they're rather quiet and just kind of let the game do the talking. And so I'm glad I became a Giants fan because seeing it from my point of view now and seeing what actually goes on within the inside of the organization, they have good things going on and they have a lot of integrity within that front office and within that team. So I'm really glad I grew up as a Giants fan.
You got quiet guys and then you got Aubrey Huff too. So it's kind of like
that's a good point. Yeah.
It's a happy medium.
he was rather quiet when he was playing too, though. So he really didn't start coming out until after he retired. I wish you wouldn't have come out and said anything, but here we are.
Exactly. Now, is it tough to kind of separate the fandom as you're writing on a national level?
Yes and no. I think more so, especially when I started playing, the fandom started to die out. I think just like you guys can probably relay, once you get a little bit older, your fandom starts to die a little bit. Because when you're younger, you look up to these guys and they're heroic. And once you start playing, I played with a lot of guys that are playing in the league right now, mostly in minor leagues right now. But, you know, like I was talking about earlier, they're human. And so I see them more as people now. So I think that helps in regards to fandom, not trying to be biased towards one team or one area. But at the same time, I've lived on the West Coast my entire life, and I definitely lean towards West Coast teams. And I definitely think I have more of an expertise, not just with the Giants, but everyone on the West Coast, Dodgers, Angels, Padres. And I definitely have a little bit of West Coast bias. I'm not going to deny it.
And you're talking to East Coast guys, so it couldn't be any bit of a better situation here.
Yeah, there you go. Mets fan. Yeah, I mean, I try and spread the joy, spread the love here, but I'm just being real. I'm trying to keep it real with you guys.
No, it's all good. Deep respect for those West Coast teams. I love the 89 World Series. I'll go back and watch that highlight video, you know, whenever it's around or whenever it's on. The San Francisco Giant teams, I mean, Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, you watch these guys, these icons, these legends, and to see the city they supported, I love that too. And you do grow and get appreciative of those things as you get a little older, a little grayer, but I don't want to get into that right now for myself. But let's take it back to CBS. So being with CBS Sports and writing, is that what you want to do? Do you want to get more into the broadcasting or do you want to stick more with just the writing?
Yeah, I think as growing up, I really wanted to do broadcast, but that business it's so tough and it's so there's very limited opportunities because there's only so many broadcast jobs and it really takes a lot of time. And so I really got into it with social media and I felt like social media gave me that foot in the door. And so I've really picked up writing and I really have a lot of goals in writing. I have a long ways to go, but my colleagues from RJ Anderson, Mike Exisa to my editor, Igor Mello, they've been incredibly influential in just helping me along and taking it step by step because I'm younger than most of the guys within the office and within my group, but they've been incredibly helpful. And so personally, I have personal goals with what I want to do with writing. I love my company. If I stayed with my company my entire career, I would be overjoyed. With that being said, I do want to do some more in-depth stories. I love what Ken Rosenthal does. He does both the national headlines, breaking news, but he also goes and sits down with players and shares personal stories and really gets a deep dive into some of these players. That's what I really want to be doing. I want to serve as a platform for players to speak publicly about their opinions, about what they went through when they were younger, what they are going through as adults. I wanted them to speak about social issues, whatever they want to do. I want to provide and be there with open arms for these guys. Right now, I'm not quite in that position. I have a long ways to go, but career-wise, that's really where I want to end up, is trying to be that platform for all these different players.
You kind of just answered like the 5-year question I would normally close out an interview with. So I don't really even need to cover that. So we'll make up something else before we get into the wrap up here. But, you know, Ken Rosenthal, obviously, he's been a staple of sports journalism for so long and doing television. Do you think maybe at some point you would explore that route? I mean, because it seems like with social media, look, I mean, we could turn the camera on and go live right now if we wanted to. And that's really cool. It's made a generation of podcasters, video streamers, but it seems like the old school writer to broadcaster, you don't see it going on as much today. But do you have any aspirations to be a television journalist at some point?
Certainly. With respect to what I'm doing on the side in regards to starting a family, you know, the girlfriend, the family, I want that to take priority, of course. And unfortunately, within this business, some of these guys just don't sleep. And I'm not saying Ken Rosenthal, family man or anything, but I mean, these guys, Adam Schefter, Adrian Wojnarowski, these guys aren't sleeping and they have their phones on all the time. And so they're sacrificing a lot. And so if you were to ask me now, would I want to do it? Yes, right now, because I don't have kids. I don't really have too many other priorities right now other than my girlfriend and my family in town as well. But so if you were to offer me the gig right now, I'd love to. 10 years down the road, if I have kids, I'm going to want to probably coach them. I want to be that father figure for them, obviously. And so I don't know. If you were to ask me the 10-year question, I don't know where I would be in 10 years because my answer would be somewhat different because I know the situation would be so different.
We're going to get your girlfriend a copy of this, and you're going to score some major brownie points for what you just said. That's very admirable of you. But again,
to me, and I know she's listening. So I spoke a little bit louder.
You are a smart man. We're going to have the relationship episode after this. You're a smart man. You could be a key guest on that show, too. But yeah, before I get to the wrap, one thing that I saw that you had online that at the beginning of this year, never would have thought in a million years, thinking ahead to 2021. San Diego Padres, Chicago White Sox. What a bold prediction. I think we would have maybe thought that a few more years down the road, maybe even throw the Toronto Blue Jays into that conversation. But what do you see on paper with that possible maybe fantasy matchup there that could come true. Padres, White Sox.
I see Fernando Tatis Jr. being one of the faces of Major League Baseball very soon. I see Chris Paddock being one of the guys in the National League West. And then for the White Sox, I see Luis Robert being an absolute stud. Michael Kopech is a guy coming off Tommy John surgery and can be an absolute ace. They signed some solid veterans. I think the Padres are still a couple signings away, which is why I'm kind of predicting that 2021 range.
Yeah,
it is bold. I'm not going to lie. It is bold, but I love what they've been doing through their farm system. They've been doing it internally through the draft. They're going to have to do it externally a little bit more, especially for the Padres. They're going to have to get some veterans to take some of these younger guys under their wing. But the age factor in Major League Baseball, it used to be thought of you have to have veterans on your team to be able to win a World Series. You have to have all these older guys who have so much experience. Last year, Juan Soto was the Nationals' best hitter, him and Anthony.
Yeah.
And he was barely, not even 21 years old. So I think just the age factor and the timetable has sped up in a good way in that it's expedited the process for a lot of these players. And that's where the Padres and White Sox are getting towards once they get their guys up to the big leagues.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, Soto is a great example because I personally thought once Harper left Washington and went to Philly, I said, well, they're going to trust this guy who's this young to take that spot, and that could backfire. And obviously it did not. He did very well, and obviously they're the world champs, so there's a little egg on my face for me. But, the guys like all the people you mentioned, but also a guy like Eloy, what is he going to develop into? Is he going to live up to expectations? Is he going to kind of flourish? There's a lot of question marks. But I think that 2021 prediction, yeah, it's very bold, but I just wouldn't have thought about it because I would have said, oh, that's more than a few years down the road. But I don't know, a couple X factors, and it could be you could be popping some champagne on your prediction.
Yeah, I'm looking for a big-time pay raise if that comes true. So I'm crossing my fingers there.
Absolutely. All right. So let's get into the wrap up here. Of course, this is Diamond Conversations. You're listening to us on the Place to Be Podcasting Network and the Place to Be Pop, joined by Danny Vietti. Danny, please, whatever else you got going on in the world, social media, any kind of stories you have coming up, please, the floor is yours. Share with us, share with the listeners where they can find everything going on in your world. I see big things coming for you. You really, you're well beyond your years already. And I'm very impressed with your body of work.
I appreciate that very much. No, thank you. I appreciate you having me on, first of all. And I'm going to have a couple more pieces coming out on CBSSports.com. You can find all my work on CBSSports.com. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram at Danny Vietti. And just to kind of speak to what's going on lately, I just hope people are open to the conversations. I'm not here to tell people what to do, what not to do. I just hope that we can learn from our past mistakes and we can get past this. Hopefully baseball can help us get past this and give us something to rally upon here in the near future.
Absolutely. No, very well said. Absolutely. I do like to end it on a light note, so I will have to ask, have you taken your girlfriend out on a date in McCovey Cove?
Oh, man, it's been a couple of years now. But coronavirus, we can't go out in public now. So that's
true.
That's an excuse.
That's true. All right. Well, Danny, I appreciate you coming on, and best of luck to you, and hope to talk to you again down the road.
All right. Take care, guys. I appreciate it.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop Feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.